This program was produced and first aired on Access Manawatu with support from New Zealand On Air.
Community Access Radio. Access Manawatu.
Welcome to Manawatu Conversations, recollections of the past and sometimes opinions about the future. Today we have with us...
Bev.
Bruce.
Beryl.
Peggy.
Trina.
Elaine.
And I am Stuart. Okay, and today we're going to be talking about school days, but not school days today, school days a long time ago. So, what sort of memories do you have of school? Are they fond memories?
You go.
Don't
you? Well, yes and no. Yes. The reason why is because it was mainly during the war years.
Okay.
And there were a lot of fears, a lot of tension.
Okay,
possibility that we could be taken over by an enemy, you know, coming in.
So where were you at school?
I was in the Hutt Central School in Lower Hutt.
Okay, and they felt vulnerable? So you were all very conscious of the war?
Yes, well, as the war years, of course, they made air raid shelters in the school grounds.
Yeah.
And we had practices that if... the bell went once, it would mean something, and if it went twice, one after the other, it meant you had to flee, get out of the building as quick as possible, and into the air raid shelter in the yard.
Okay.
Now that was in my Tarni Tots when I was in Primal 1, the first stages of school.
Okay. Yeah. So who was... You say that there was a lot of tension. Was it that the teachers were very worried? Your parents, the families?
Well, they were worried. Everybody really was concerned because we didn't know if an enemy would come in and take over our country.
Yes.
I understand the Japanese were just outside Wellington Harbour at one stage.
Yeah.
And so we were encouraged to put black... blankets up at the window so there'd be no light showing.
So yeah, blackouts in the
And the reason for that was if the enemy's planes were going overhead and they'd look down on this house and there'd be a slight light, they knew there'd be a house and they'd drop a bomb.
Yeah.
So we used to have one man of the street would be arranged that he would be the caretaker.
Oh, the air raid warden.
And I remember one night we had all our blankets up and we weren't trying to talk very loud, of course, and there was a big bang on the window. Bang, bang, bang. Oh, it gave us a start. Put your lights out.
Yeah.
That was the message, and the man went off to the next house. So there was tension that way.
Yeah. So were there ever any enemy planes spotted?
No, they were, as we know, no.
There were submarines.
There was submarines.
Off Wellington and off Auckland.
Yes.
Mm. And that's why all the bomb shelters were around.
Yeah.
My mother was at school in Foxton.
Yes.
And Foxton that's where the American, had a very big American base there.
Mm.
And they were sort of... because it was really coastal and that, but they had a lot there, and she used to talk about all the Marines in town.
We had the Marines too. They had these pontoon, they used to make pontoon bridges across the river. We had a Hutt River right behind us, and they were filled with air, and the army trucks and all could go over to get over the other side of the river.
Okay.
So we used to sometimes play on them, you know.
Yeah.
And there's always a talk of the Americans wanted something to build. They did a lot of building.
Hmm.
And they wanted to actually put a bridge down the middle of the Manawatu Gorge.
Yes.
And they weren't allowed to.
Yeah. Yeah.
Which would have helped us now.
Yeah.
Wow. Yes. Well, I don't know. They might think it would have spoiled the view for everybody.
But at least you'd be able to drive through it.
Yes. Yes. True.
And also... our parents were encouraged to dig a hole. We had a bit of backyard to dig a hole quite a big and put a pipe, a big concrete tube in, and make that an air raid shelter in the event that it needed to hide, go and hide.
So there was a lot of preparation locally for
defense. Yes. And it was tension, really. Mm. That was in my young days.
Up in Auckland, they've got all the battlements and...
Yes.
Up there.
The defense. Mm.
The Wilmington Harbour, they built in these a sort of, I don't know what you call them, fences under the water that stop...
Oh, the submarine netting.
Yeah.
And
submarine netting.
Yes. Okay.
But then after when the war was all over, they were still in, and there was little walkways out in the water too, wherever they were.
Oh,
so okay. People used to go out there and fish.
Oh, yeah. Okay. Yeah. So during the war then, what about teachers in school, did you?
Well, our main teachers were all taken overseas, and so they had to call on some of the elderly ladies that used to be teachers.
Mm.
So we had a few, and we... For one time there, well, it was quite a while, really, we didn't even have a schoolmaster.
Mm.
Just had to have somebody standing in as a schoolmaster.
Yeah.
Yeah. Okay. So the kids, sometimes the kids are a bit rough, you know, with these old ladies.
Mm.
I could tell you their names, but it might be nicer not to.
Okay. So what about did that mean that the education
went right down to zero, really.
Yeah.
Kids were riff-raffety and no sort of law and order in two seats. But then we got a headmaster came in. He was a retired old man, but his name was Mr. Tangy.
Yeah.
And he had a walking stick and a ganky leg. And you hear him coming along the corridor, bang, donk, bang, jump, you know. But he put the school back up on its right feet again.
Okay. Was it also a problem because of so many fathers serving overseas, or were most still in New Zealand?
A lot of the children used to have their fathers overseas, but my dad couldn't go because he was graded as grade 3. He was.
That's the fitness level, is it?
Yes. So then he was put into what they call the EPMS, and that had a band around their arm here, and if they heard the sirens go... He had to jump on his bicycle, because he didn't have a car, and go over to the Hutt Township.
Mm.
And, supposedly, they'd be wounded, and he'd be there to help bring the wounded.
Yeah.
That was his part.
EPNS.
EPANS, I think. EPANS?
Okay.
That's how we used to say it.
Mm.
But anyway.
Yeah. Okay. Mm.
So that was my school days right up.
And that coloured your whole view of school. You didn't think school's fine when you were
there. Yeah, because there was tension in the home too. With my grandma used to live next door, and she used to come over and read the newspaper to Dad. But we were having our meal, and Dad was listening to the radio, and he wanted to hear what was being said, you know.
Mm.
So there was a bit of tension.
Yeah, because of course a lot of the news was spread through radio, a lot of it.
Radio, just an old square box.
Yeah, the old valve radio. You turn it on and wait for a minute for it to warm up, and did you get any news from the BBC or it was?
Well, I don't know. I was young. I didn't read it, you know.
Yeah. Okay.
Okay, Bev?
No, mine's not good.
I don't want to. That's
good. Okay. Yes, well, I started school in Rahutu, little old country town, and I think my first memories, as I got a wee bit older, I think on the first day I went round collecting everybody's pencils. I'm not sure what I did with them, but I can't remember much about that. But as for school days were coloured, as Beryl said,
I'll just put this over here.
Yes, in case I spill it. And one of the memories would be of, as the country people, then round Opunaki, Pihama, and different places around Taranaki, were the farewells, final farewells to the boys, as they put it. And it was a... happy and sad sort of gathering with all the home cooking, all wonderful home cooking, and saying goodbye to the boys. And I do have memories, and my whole school days around that time was coloured with the war years, and seeing trains of khaki coloured men getting on trains and going off after their final farewells. And contrary to Beryl, I do remember when I went through to New Plymouth, we had a man headmaster. I don't recall our school years suffering too much, because I think the women that I recall as being teachers were good. But yes, the blackouts, as Beryl said, and the tapping on the window with the air raid, with a very loud, demanding voice, commanding voice, and saying there's a light showing, and the air raid shelter at the bottom of the garden, which was useless.
Oh.
Ration books.
Oh, yes,
Ration. And rumours about the submarine and the Wellington Harbour. That was reality.
Okay.
I believe the Japanese even had money printed, so the story goes, ready to take over New Zealand.
Okay.
And
so you mentioned ration books. Was there much rationing in the war?
It didn't really affect us too much, especially because we were on the farm when I was quite young. It was later on that we moved to New Plymouth and Dad went in the army. But though the ration didn't affect us much at all on the farm, but when we came into town, even then, it didn't really.
So what was rationed?
Tea.
Yes.
Butter.
Milk,
was it?
Yes.
Oh, well, we always... And because in those days there was no bottles of milk, you went to various places around, even in New Plymouth, with your billy. I'm not sure where they had the cow. It must have been farmlands just at the back of houses, etc. And you went with your billy and got butter and milk and cream. So there didn't appear to be any hardship there. And people that smoked seemed to get enough.
Yeah.
Their cigarettes. No, and meat. It was ration, but we, unlike England.
Yeah, it was a fairly generous ration then, was it?
We had enough. We had plenty.
Okay.
So much so I can remember my mother making lovely fruit cakes and sending them over to England, to relations over there.
Okay. So was New Zealand still sending a lot of food to England?
Yes. Well, I think so, but of course there were stories of ships being torpedoed and food and people being food going down.
Yes.
And so the whole of school days were coloured with the war, and it broke up a lot of families, as it did ours. But
in what you mean, broke up because someone was sent overseas to serve, or?
Well, I think it's split a lot of families because it gave women opportunities that they didn't have before. There were land girls, I forget the word term used to send them off to the various jobs. They were told,
they were just sent to different farms.
As was my late husband. He didn't go overseas because of a heart condition. He was, I forget the term, commandeered, or
that might be
to go to a milk factory somewhere, I think, to essential services to keep them going.
Okay.
Yeah. One vivid memory before I close was of going through to Featherston when Dad was transferred to Featherston military camp and guarding the Japanese prisoners. And I can still remember on my way to school seeing the small trucks with small trays and Japanese on the back, few Japanese, not many, and the guards there standing with their guns.
That before the
that
riots?
Was when the war had started.
Yeah, but with you were saying with the Japanese, there was the
the trouble at the Featherston camp? Is
that? Well, that was soon after. Before. I think the breakout was later.
Okay.
I think. Yes, and I can remember one story Dad telling, I think it was him that told it, was the Japanese inside in the warmth, laughing at the prison, at the guards outside in the cold and freezing, you know. I think they were treated pretty well.
Yes.
They must have been. Better than the people guarding, than the guards guarding them.
Yes.
But,
you talk about food. When I was doing my Vicky Lee concerts, this lady told us, a girl was there who was at a nursing home. She's talking about a 96-year-old lady that hadn't come, but that she used to make ginger nuts and send them overseas. And said that, in fact, her ginger nuts became so famous that Griffin's got her recipe. So we're listening to this lady saying, half believing, half not. So I Googled it, and it was true. Here's this lady, and she's... she lives in the Featherston rest home, and she was the person who made the ginger nuts and sent them overseas, and Griffin's bought her recipe.
Oh, wow. Mm.
Yeah. She'd be in her hundreds now, because she's late 90s when we do that.
Mm. We have a neighbour down our street, and she used to make those ginger nuts. And she used to buy eggs. We had a few chooks. And Mum used to sell the eggs to her, and she always give us just one. And she only made them little new ones. But to fill them in tins and set them away.
So did any of you have much contact with the Americans during the war?
No. I've never seen the Marines here in Palmerston. And the odd occasion when the military police would take them off the streets because they were drunken and rowdy, or had a bit of a fight with some of our people, coloured people in particular.
My mother was emotional because she was living in Foxton, but her father was a taxi driver, so she didn't have much show with the Americans in town because he knew exactly what was going on in town. All her friends would be off to dances and things, and she'd go, but he'd have his beady eye on her.
Yeah.
She always said that was a bit unfair, having a father who was a taxi driver.
So what old was she then?
She'd be about 15 or 16.
Right. And was that the age of most of the girls who went to the dances with the
Probably. Because a lot of the others, as you say, were off working on farms and doing things.
Mm. I had a cousin who lived next door, Auntie Napa next door, three girl cousins there, and one in the middle girl. She got interested in an American Marine. He was a nice fellow too. Anyway, he returned finally back to the States, and I think his mother talked him out of taking up this New Zealand girl.
Yeah, okay.
Elaine, what do you really remember about school days?
I was born in southwest England, and it's a little small village, and we were fairly close to the city of Bristol, and there was a big dockyard at the inner city. Outside the city, and of course the Germans
they kept bombing it,
and so I can remember Bristol was our big shopping area, and I remember going there as a little girl with my older sister, and she was about to buy a wedding dress, and we were going to one of the posh shops in Bristol to buy it. And when we went by bus, and when we got out of the bus, we were in two main thoroughfare streets, and everything there'd been a raid the night before, and everything was just piles of ashes, literally.
Yeah.
And people were actually searching through the remains, obviously, of their their houses, their homes, and it's pretty traumatic. And later on, I was at school, and we also had very few male teachers. We had mostly older ladies too. And one good thing that came out of that era was the fact that we had school lunches, actually roasts and things like that, actually provided at school, so that it released the mothers that they could go and do war work.
Yeah, that's an interesting point, because I grew up in England after the war, but they still had school lunches going well into the 1960s, and it meant that children from any background, and there was comments about is it good food or not, but it was very healthy, balanced, nutritious food, and they do say that actually the children who grew up through that were better fed, not overfed, but better fed and healthier because of the food they had. And what they have after that, when they stop that, you get the children eating packets of crisps and dried noodles and all sorts of things at school, which was nothing like as good. So,
Talking about the Americans, I don't know what you're talking about while I was away, but we lived on a farm south of Shannon, and when the Americans were over here and they did their manoeuvres and etc., there was 1 week when our farm and the farm next door, we had to host the Americans, and they brought all their armoured vehicles and everything all over our farm. And they, I don't know, they did all sorts of things because of the size at school during the day. But in the, when we got home from school and we had our cow shed and we milked by hand, and the, all around the railing, around the holding yards and that, there were these all Americans, all Marines, all hanging over the fences watching us. And of course they were amused to see there were two, my sister and I, helping milk these cows, and they just enjoyed watching. And my mother made cakes, and they had eggs and all sorts of things off our farm that they thoroughly enjoyed. And there was a farm next door as well, and that went on for a week. And we were allowed to, with supervision of course, we were allowed to go out and climb over their vehicles, and it was exciting.
So how old were you then?
Well, I would have been at that stage about 13, I suppose.
Okay.
And because I think I was 11 when the war broke out. It would have been 16 when it was finished. And it was in that period. And they were stationed further around the road where we lived. And I remember one Sunday afternoon, there were four of us in our family, four girls, and a couple of cousins staying with us. And we used to go down to the creek, which was about half a mile from our house. And we went there this afternoon, and all these Marines, they must have had the afternoon off because it was Sunday. And they sort of came from nowhere, I don't know where they came from. But they all came down, and we were on the bridge. And they stayed there and talked to us, and they were just like, well, to us, just like any New Zealanders. You know, they talked away about all sorts of things. It was very interesting.
Yeah.
We enjoyed that.
Mm. Did they say, I don't suppose you would have talked about where they were going to go or if they'd already served anywhere?
No, nothing like that, but of course they did. They went direct out in the Pacific just after that, and most of them were killed.
They were down here waiting to go to the Pacific.
Yes.
That's where they went into the Pacific, because that was just after we'd been threatened with a Japanese invasion. There were, those little boats that were sighted off the coast of Boston, raiders by the ears.
And what about your... So you were at school then?
Yes, I did my... all the time, I was 5 years at secondary school, and the whole five years were war years. And our headmaster was a returned soldier from the First World War. He had two artificial legs and two crutches. He was absolutely amazing man. And he encouraged all his pupils to write to... our soldiers overseas, anyone we knew, he said, it doesn't matter, as long as you know their address, write to them. And so we all did, right through the war, wrote letters to people we knew or even didn't know. And in the assembly each morning, he would read out the answers to some of these letters, some really interesting letters. And it was just amazing how he kept us in touch.
That's
he was
good.
Determined that no soldier that was over there would not have a letter from home.
So what would you write about?
Oh, look, I don't know, but I could have been sitting in the front room every weekend and writing a letter. And you'd write about anything and everything. Whether it was of any interest to the men, I have no idea. Oh, it was, because I got letters back, and they used to write names too. I don't know what we put in them. I know one of them said he was thrilled to the back teeth to have a little daughter, which of course he hadn't seen.
Yeah.
Yes, but no... But that was, and then of course there was the big ball at the end of the war when we celebrated
Where was that held? Where was that held?
Oh, I think it was held in every town in New Zealand.
Oh, okay, yeah.
We danced.
But you went to one?
Oh, yes, and we danced in the streets to start with, in the Levin streets. A band appeared, everyone danced. The same as they would have been over in London, I suppose. And then they had a planned ball, a big ball, and everybody went to the, and the staff went to those, to the two, BJ and VE.
So did you or any of your friends have family members who were serving overseas?
Yes, an uncle of mine was actually in the St John for the whole of the war, and I had a cousin, an uncle, and because we have relations in England, and my uncle bought a war bride back, an English war bride.
Ah, okay. To this area?
No, to Opanaki.
Ah, okay. Yep.
We had my auntie lived with us. She was only when I was 14. She was 21, and she became engaged to one of our neighbours, a farmer, a young man, and he didn't come back. We used to hold farewell evenings in the Buckley Golf Course rooms for all our neighbourhood boys when they went, and give them a farewell. And I can remember when Alan went, I recited a poem, I've Got a Pain in My Sawdust, pretending I was a doll. But he didn't come back. We got a telegram to say that he was, it was Al Alamein, that he was wounded. And almost immediately we got a second telegram to say he was killed, and the ambulance that was taking him back to the hospital base was hit with a plane. Of course, Anne was hit.
So was that common? Did you feel there were a lot of the people who went overseas didn't come back?
Oh, yes.
Yes, my grandmother's brother didn't. My grandfather went to the war, he came back. And he was he never spoke about the war. And he was shot in the leg. But he told us, he didn't know it was shot at the time. He told us he had a broken leg. Broke his leg when he was in Cairo drunk. It wasn't until after he died, when we got his war records, he was actually injured in action, shot in action, but he never spoke of that. It was always, I was drunk in Cairo and broke my leg, fell off a truck. So he never wanted anyone to know it was in the war. And a lot of them were like that. They wouldn't talk about it.
Usually the other way around, isn't it?
Yes.
Yeah.
Yes.
I was actually drunk.
Yeah. I think they said those who boasted most often did least, and kept quiet.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
Well, I had a dad that came back from the First World War, and I wish I'd been a bit older, because I was 14 when he died, and he'd never spoken about the war. I only know he went to every Anzac Day service that there was, but all my life I've just wished that,
I think sometimes maybe they feel, you know, how do you express it in a way that
some
you
of it's too
said
to express, wasn't it? It's too much.
Yeah, because it's got to be heard by the person. Thank you for listening to Manawatu Conversations. This and other recent programs can be found on the Access Manawatu website. A range of programs is also available on the Manawatu Heritage website of the Palmerston North City Archive, and the address for that is manawatuheritage.pncc.govt.nz.
Access Manawatu is a non-profit radio station.
We exist to help people from Manawatu make programs just like this one.
All of our shows are free to listen to and free to make.
If you like what you hear and you'd like to help us make more,
you can donate through our website.
Go to www.accessmanawatu.co.nz and click on the donate link on the front page to help us keep on giving people their fair share of the air.